Is that that game? That you, Justin?
All right, well, good morning. My name is Justin Benavides. We'll go ahead and get started. Got a lot of slides to get through and want to make sure we have time at the end for questions. So what we're going to talk about today, first of all, again, my name is Justin Benavides. I am the district economist for AgriLife District 1 in Amarillo. So coming down here to District 2 to do a little bit of guesswork. But today we're going to talk about primarily cotton outlook and hemp considerations. And if I can answer any questions on some other crops, I'm happy to try and do that. These are just the slides I have prepared for today. So if you have any questions along the way, feel free to go ahead and stop me. But we'll go ahead and dive on in so we can get through some stuff. Uh-oh. All right. So first, I like to go through the general economic outlook. So what overall are we looking at for the economy in general? And we'll talk about why that's important for the cotton market in particular. We'll talk about some cotton fundamentals and what we're seeing in the cotton market and why we actually have a positive outlook for price for the upcoming year. And then about half of the back end of the presentation, we're going to talk about some considerations around hemp. And I don't claim to be a hemp expert, and I would argue that anybody who does is someone that you should exercise caution around when making production decisions. I think 6 months is a very short time to become an expert in any sort of field. So just since this topic has kind of ramped up in the state of Texas, caution is what I would urge if you're working with people who claim to be an overnight expert, for sure. But we'll dive into a little bit of that, and I'll give you some of the numbers that we do have. So again, first we're going to talk about the economy. I promise it won't be that painful. So what we have here is a measure of economic growth year over year going from 1980 to 2024. Too close to the speaker. So if here on the left-hand side, you can see percent change from the previous year. And I always like to start with this as a baseline fundamental look at what the economy is doing, because it's important for consumption in general and in particular for the agricultural market. And as we'll see on the next slide, particularly for cotton. Closer? Oh, good. Okay. All right. So in red, we have emerging markets and developing economies. In blue, we've got advanced economies. And in green, we have the aggregate of all of our economies in the world and their percentage growth year over year. Move over here so I don't keep getting that feedback. All right. So what do we mean when we say emerging markets and developing economies? Well, those are our BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, as well as Mexico, and a bunch of Southeast Asian countries. So those 10 countries combined are important because combined they represent about 50% of the world's population, and many of them are coming out of severe poverty for the first time, turning on the lights for the first time. And that's important for agricultural markets, particularly in the United States, because we are such a large exporter of agricultural goods. Because when those people are able to increase their income for the first time, they begin to solidify their food purchases and expand the amount of food that they're purchasing. It's important for grains because they directly consume more grain, and they also demand a higher protein base in their diet, which means that there's more grain used in animal feed around the world. So it's important for grains, and on the next slide we'll get into some details about why economic growth is important for cotton too. But what you can see here for a reference point, we have this big dip in the middle. For those of y'all, I'm in the way, sorry. In the middle, we have the Great Recession that ended or started in about 2008, early 2009. So that big dip is when we saw a recession in our advanced economies. When we say advanced economies, we mean the United States, the European Union, Canada, and countries in that kind of that order. And out here on the end, we have a forecast of growth. So you can see that our forecast of growth, even though we've had a lot of discussion in the last year and into the early part of this year about a potential for recession or a slowdown, those projections do not have us in an actual recession. For a recession, we'd have to be below that dotted line, which would mean negative growth year over year. We are not projecting recessionary activity, but maybe a moderation or a slowdown in growth, leveling out just below 2% or maybe up around the 2% level, which is still growth. And so we're not talking about necessarily a recession, but maybe an economic slowdown or just overall a little bit of a tightening of the economy as we move into particularly a presidential election, which causes a lot of divesting or leaving money out of the market, which causes people just a little bit of nervousness. But overall, still a positive growth outlook for the upcoming years. That's this dotted line out here in the end. These are forecasts. So that's the general economy. And now we'll talk about why that's important for the cotton market in particular. What I've got here, again, is starting in 1970, moving out to 2020, we have cotton consumed in pounds per capita in the blue line. And then in the yellow boxes, we represent recessions or global economic slowdowns. So you can see as we move into recessions, through recessions, we see a slowdown in pounds consumed per capita. So when we were growing through the 2000s, we saw a massive run-up in pounds consumed per capita. As we moved into and through the Great Recession, again here in this big yellow box, we saw a major decline in the pounds consumed per capita. And why is that when compared to grains? Grains are a foodstuff, so no matter what the economic situation, we all have to eat. Cotton goes more into stuff like durable goods along the lines of clothing, sofas, things that you will stop purchasing out of the gate if you expect to have less money in the near future, or if you're in a situation where you have less money available than you did the year before. So that's why global economic growth and domestic economic growth is so important for cotton, because growing economies mean people are more confident in their ability to spend money on durable goods that will last a long time. And a lot of those things are made with cotton. So economic growth, not only domestically but internationally, is very positive for the cotton market. And so as long as the economy is moving in a general positive direction, we expect to see a bump up in pounds consumed per capita. So we'll get now into some specific cotton fundamentals. Made it through the economy. There's a full 4 years of education in 5 minutes. So you're all good. You can go get a diploma. Does anybody have any questions before we move into cotton fundamentals? Okay, good deal. So here what I have plotted is the ratio of stocks to use and the price. So in red, we have the A index composite world price for cotton. And in these blue boxes, we have stocks to use ratios. And you can see the all-important number that we kind of get as in corn as well as cotton is a ratio of 40. So if we have fallen below that line of 40 going across, we begin to see an increase in the price of cotton. So the last time we fell before a ratio of 40, we saw a massive spike in price. And that was mostly driven by hedge fund activity, because it was the first time that hedge funds had really noticed the rule that applies to corn may also apply to cotton. And what that ratio of 40 means is that we expect we need about that much cotton per day in order to go through the normal processing sector that we would expect to go through. So if you get below that number, there start to be some logistical challenges in getting cotton or corn, if you're talking about corn, where we need it when we need it. So if we fall below that ratio, that's a bullish signal for price. We haven't fallen below that level in stocks to use since that period, but you can see that's when we saw kind of in the late 2010 period where we saw that run up to above $2 cotton. So declining stocks are important not only for cotton but for all commodities in general. And we are seeing a declining stocks situation right now. And I'll go through this graph. We'll talk about what I mean. So you can see here in the yellow line, I have the January stocks to use plotted out of the WASDE. So this is a record of what the WASDE has said about our stocks to use. Excuse me, that's not stocks to use. That's just absolute stocks, which is over here in 480-pound bales. I've mislabeled it at the bottom. It's just stocks. But on the left-hand side, we've got stocks in 1,480-pound bales. And you can see that these two lines, the green one being price in cents per pound, move in the opposite direction of each other. So when we have an increase in stocks, we tend to have a decrease in price. When we have a decrease in stocks right here, you can see we tend to have an increase in price. So what's been happening since about September is we've seen a repeatedly decreasing amount of stocks reported by the WASDE each month. There was one month, I believe, November and December, that they remained the same. But since the month of September, each WASDE has had us at a lower level of stocks almost every month. And so we've moved this little black line you can kind of see at the top. That was where we were in November. September, we were much closer to up here. And now the projection for the end of the year, this red dotted line has us going all the way down to almost below 4 million bales. So that would be the lowest stocks we've had in a few years. and that should be a positive signal for price. So this line, the green line, is what the season average farm price projection was for old crop, what we're calling old crop cotton now, for the 2019-2020 year. But we expect that average farm price to go up. And if you look, ever since these important WASDE reports, the price has been going up from that low 60-cent range, around 61 cents, all the way up to we've gotten a little bit over 70 cents on the board. So, again, the WASDE is an important report because it gives people an estimation of how much we have in supply. And the two things that come together that make price are supply and demand. If we have an increasing supply with constant demand, we expect a decrease in price. That's just basic fundamental economics. And if we have a lowering of stocks or a lowering of supply with constant demand, that means we would expect an increase in price. And that's what we're seeing right here. So that September 11th WASDE, you can see this green bar was a big run-up in the price of cotton because of the fact that we saw a contraction in ending stocks. And that's because of some liquidation in Chinese stocks, as well as production challenges right here in the Texas High Plains. We produce so much cotton and are such an important market that a lot of the prevent plant and late planting periods that we had that led to low yields in the High Plains and out into the rolling plains led to a contraction in ending stocks, or at least what our projected ending stocks are. Again, in October, we saw an increase in price following a decrease in expected ending stocks. Sideways trading through November and into December because that ending stocks number stayed the same. And again in December, a run-up in price because they lowered ending stocks again. So as we see a decrease in ending stocks, we are seeing an associated increase in price. And so as we see a lower in supply, that's a very bullish signal for price, and that's why compared to last year, our price projection is bullish for cotton. We're expecting somewhere in the neighborhood of more 70 or 75 cents compared to the 60 cent value that we saw for season average farm price in this previous year. So what else is this ending stocks decrease doing to the market? Well, as the price runs up as a result of declining ending stocks, cotton is becoming a more and more attractive option for production when compared to corn. So that's what this chart shows. It's the ratio of corn price to cotton price, and as that ratio gets smaller, or cotton becomes relatively more attractive in terms of its ending price or its ending value when compared to corn, we would expect more people to plant cotton acreage because they expect to make more money. So as more and more stocks have been liquidated and the price has gone up, we've moved from this September 10th value of about 10 million acres all the way up to a projection of around 13 million acres. And that's because, as again, cotton becomes more attractive in terms of price, more and more people are expected to produce it just because they'll make more money in theory than they would on corn, or they have a higher net return. So that's the direction we're seeing acres going, and that's kind of why we're seeing a little bit of a top in the cotton price right now. People are waiting on some Chinese purchases and to see kind of what's going on in the market to see if cotton needs to run back up. We haven't had any Chinese purchases. I was telling Bryce over here that it's weird the things you have to learn as an economist. For instance, I know now that we are in the Chinese New Year, and so no one in China is working, and that's what's spooking the market a little bit, and that's why we're seeing a little bit of this weird price action. You would expect a run-up in prices after the signing of a trade deal between China and the United States, but since no purchases have been recorded because no one is really working in China, there's a little bit of hesitation to buy into more cotton or buy into the price going up. Let me see what my time is really quick. Oh, we're still doing good. Okay, so what all of this supply movement means is that we are largely going to base our price projections on changes in supply for the upcoming year. Demand is expected to remain fairly constant, not expecting a huge run-up in demand unless there's some movement in Chinese purchases again. But what that means is that these markets are particularly volatile when they're driven by demand or supply individually and not a balance of both. So what we have here in red, we have stable years of stocks moving from August all the way through a year and a half into December. And then in black, we have, red is tightening stocks. So red is where we have a decreasing stocks amount month over month, which is the situation we're in this year. Black is when we have stable or increasing stocks. And you can see that the price movement is a little bit different. Even though the index value is a little lower, overall the price movement is positive when we have lowering stocks. And you can see that our blue line, which is the December 2020 futures price, is moving along with that seasonal pattern for tightening stocks years. And you can see that it peaks out here in June, July, when we have enough cotton emerging around the country and in a stable growing condition that people are more confident in the overall supply that we'll have for processing in the upcoming year. So we would expect, if we continue to follow this tightening stocks trend, to see that price run up into the June-July period. But because of the volatility and basing all of the forecasts and the changes on one side, this is a good year to, if you have the ability and the option to do it, consider marketing some of your crop if you see a price that makes you some money. Even if it's 5% or 10%, if you have an option to market some of it in a profitable situation, this is a good year to do it. Just because the volatility is something to consider. And if we got a WASDE that came back and revised that one number that we're basing a lot of this movement on to a higher ending stocks value, we would expect a market drop. So again, positive pricing, never lost anybody any money. So if you have the option to market, this is a good year to consider doing that if you've got good pricing. Now, I've talked about China a little bit, and this is just a slide to show you how important the overall export market is for cotton when compared to some of our other commodities. So corn, we use a lot domestically. We only export about 12%. Soybeans and wheat, we export a little bit more, around 40%. But you can see we export about 80% of our cotton on an annual basis, and that's to countries that have labor to spin that cotton into yarn and make it into textile products or those durable good products that I talked about earlier. So because exports are such an important factor in cotton, all of the trade deals we've been signing recently, particularly with Mexico and China, could be very, again, bullish signals for the price in the upcoming year. If they continue to make purchases out of Mexico and start making significant purchases out of China, this could be a bullish signal for the upcoming year. I'm not sure how the long-term aspects of this trade deal will work out if China continues making aggressive large purchases and builds up stocks for the next 2 years. 3 or 4 years from now, we might see a change in the overall situation, but for the upcoming year, the trade deal should be nothing but bullish for our large export commodities, cotton being one of those. That's why the export market is so important for cotton. So what are our factors? Again, just to review for 2020, old crop is neutral to modestly bearish. However, the picture is improved. We're not expecting old crop cotton to increase in price much above what it is because, again, we're seeing those acre expectations for the upcoming year increase, balancing out that decrease in ending stocks over the previous year. Issues to watch include our export markets, again, China and Mexico. Turkey is a particularly interesting one because they were one of our major export destinations for cotton until the last 2 or 3 years. There's been significant political upheaval in that country and some challenges with their currency, so they're purchasing less. But if they were able to find stability and get back into purchasing more cotton, we would expect them to that to be a bullish signal for price. New crop outlook has a potential for better price this year than what we saw in the previous year. And again, we're looking at more in a 70 to 75 cent range for the season average farm price compared to the 61 cent season average farm price we saw in the previous year. And this is a good year to be prepared for nimble hedging or selling in a single side driven market. So again, if that number for ending stocks was revised, if someone found that they had a higher level of ending stocks than initially expected, and that number went back up towards 5 million bales instead of the below 4 million we have now as our projection, that could decrease that price that we've seen a run-up to in the past couple of months. That's what I have on cotton. Does anyone have any questions really quick before we move into hemp? Let me check my time. Oh, we're doing good. Any questions? I can take them at the end, too, if you'd like. Okay, we'll go ahead and move into hemp. So again, I'm going to say before I start this, I am not a hemp expert, and I would argue that almost no one in the state of Texas is going to be a hemp expert. We might know some people who are experts, but they haven't been growing it legally for the last couple of years, so there's a difference in what we would consider an expert that we talk to in the agronomy sector versus some of our, I guess, homegrown experts. But I will say these are the numbers that we have available to us. Data is a little sparse. And so a lot of this is subject to change, and that's the main thing to understand whenever you listen to anybody talk about hemp, including myself. this market is subject to change. And the second thing I'll say is this presentation is going to look relatively negative. I do not intend it that way whatsoever. I'm not discouraging anyone from growing hemp. My main consideration would be if this is something you can look at and it can increase your margins a little bit on a small scale and you run the numbers yourself or with a professional and talk to a lawyer who can help you with your contracting and you've done your due diligence, it might be worth a try, but it's something that you have to put a lot of thought, care, and consideration into before you go ahead and dive on in. So, again, I think this presentation is going to look negative. I don't intend it that way. I'm just giving you the facts that we have available. But we'll go ahead and dive on in. And if y'all have any questions along the way, feel free to stop me. If I don't know the answer, I know I'll hunt it down for you afterwards. So go ahead and just stop me if you have anything. So potential extra costs. We're just going to start at the beginning. What are some costs potentially for hemp that we wouldn't see from other crops? So testing and licensing. I've got more slides on this in a little bit. We've just had some new rules released by TDA, some regulations that are going to be a little bit more illuminating than what I put this slide together a month ago. But this testing and licensing for an individual producer or a producer and a combination of fields could be well above $500. Now, the return, if it is what everyone says it is for CBD in the future, means that this will be a non-problem. This $500 is not going to be a problem. But it is a significant cost in the outset to think about that you don't have to deal with other crops necessarily. So that includes a couple of fees that we'll talk about a few slides later. It's a labor-intensive crop, so it's not something that we have the technology to get out there with big tractors yet. There's not any approved herbicide or pesticide for this crop. And because of that, a lot of hand hoeing and hand weeding is involved. And in fact, in a lot of cases, there's some hand harvesting involved. So that's another additional cost you'll have to consider, additional labor compared to other crops. This loss from what we're calling a hot crop. So I'm sure if you listen to the radio, watch the TV, had coffee shop talk, we all know it's about 0.3% is the THC threshold level. So if you go above that, you are not only subject to the loss of your crop, but you are subject to DEA disposal regulations. And so that's not just going out and plowing it under or lighting it on fire and having your friends all come hang out with you next to the field. That is actual DEA mandated specific instructions that are going to be significantly costly. So that's something else to keep in mind. And we live in a stressful environment for crops. I mean, we've gotten good at growing stuff here, obviously, but it's a stressful environment that we all deal with every year. And it's stressful on the plants, and that's kind of one of those things that bumps up the THC level, is what I've been told. Again, I'm not an agronomist. Finally, security. This is just maybe some silly stuff that I've thought about myself, but there's been a lot of reports around the country with people growing this of some yahoos from in town who can't tell the difference between a hemp field and a cannabis field coming in and stealing a lot of your crop because they think, I'm going to get a good high, even though they're going to go home and smoke a bale of it and not have any sort of impact. This is something you might have to consider. A second consideration in including security in a business plan is that you cannot visually tell. Agronomists have told me this. Maybe, I don't know if Jordan's around, but agronomists have told me that you cannot visually tell, even professionals, the difference between a cannabis plant and a hemp plant. I believe that they are the same species, and an industrial hemp plant is just a designation of something below 0.3 THC. So what that means is that this is another one that I've just kind of come up with on my own. I'm not sure. I haven't heard any reports of it, but there's nothing to say that if you don't have someone watching your field, another yahoo from in town might come out, replace some of your legitimate hemp plants with some of their own variety, and use it as a cover to grow their own crop. And then when you end up with testing and you have a value of THC that's through the roof, you're subject to those losses from a hot crop that we've already discussed. And again, I have not heard any reports of that, but maybe that means I'm a little too clever for my own good. But that's something that I would be concerned about. All right, so fees that came out in the specified TDA, or fees specified in the TDA published regs that just came out in around a week ago. These are additional things that you'll have to consider whenever you're going through the application process or considerations for growing hemp. We've got a license application fee, a license modification fee if applicable, annual license renewal fee, which I believe is just every year you have to apply to get your license is kind of what it looks like to me. An annual background check fee, which I've looked around. It seems to be in the neighborhood of $30 to $35. I'm not positive. Participation fee at minimum for each facility, each lot, and a processor registration. So if you have different fields, which would probably just be an FSA farm number, different FSA farm numbers growing hemp, you're going to have to pay a fee for each field that you're growing it on. Facility modification fee, if applicable. So if you're converting something from an old greenhouse to a new greenhouse in which you will grow hemp, or you're changing the structure of your field to grow hemp, that might require a facility modification fee. And you might say, Justin, this is a lot of potential extra costs. That's not all of them. We also have laboratory registration fees that primarily refer to labs, and it's not something we'd all be concerned about, but it is an additional fee for labs. Fee for licensed samplers contracted with TDA to conduct sampling. This is something to consider because, again, as I said, that THC level, that all-important number, as it goes up, if you're just planting your crop and waiting for TDA to come out and test at the end of the year, you're kind of in a black box between planting and harvesting time. It's been suggested that you might hire private contractors to come test your crop, which is going to be an additional cost, and they have to be licensed, and you would pay a fee for those samplers. Shipment and transportation fees, testing fees payable to the laboratory. So not only do you have to pay for TDA to come sample, you also have to pay the fee to the lab in order for them to test it. Finally, that fee for destruction of material in accordance with DEA reverse distributor regulations. And to me, I haven't seen numbers on this. We probably need to sit down with DEA and get estimates, but this to me would be the most significant cost because you have the actual accounting cost of paying to destroy that crop as well as the implicit economic cost of losing your crop, as well as whatever revenue you could have gotten from the crop you would have grown otherwise. So significant cost right here in terms of economics and accounting. So now we'll talk a little bit about supply. I don't know if you noticed with cotton, but I like to talk about supply, a little bit about demand, and how those two come together to make price. So this is the top five states over the last 3 years in terms of hemp acreage, starting in 2017, going into 2019, and that's licensed acreage. So we don't know for sure that hemp was grown on those acres, but they were licensed to grow hemp. So it's Tennessee, Montana, Oregon, Kentucky, and Colorado coming in at number one, and that's in terms of our overall acres in 2019, that ranking. So you can see the growth rate from 2017 to 2019 is over 18,000% in Tennessee. It's over 1,700% in Kentucky, growth rate of 725% in Colorado. The aggregation of these growth rates for the top five states is about 1,400%. So we've seen an increase in acreage of about 1,400% over the last 3 years, just for those top five states. And total U.S. acreage has increased to by about 1,100%. That is not including Texas because we do not have any licensed acreage as of yet. So I would expect that this number may increase again over the next year. Now, what does that give us? That rate of growth in acreage is a rate of growth in production that we would expect because the amount of acres are directly correlated to overall production. If the growth rate in a product is exceeding the demand rate or the change in demand, again, that is going to send us a signal of a bearish outlook for price or a negative outlook for price. You can see this is a very large growth rate to outstrip. So we'll talk about what our pricing projection is now. These are some CBD model estimations from the Ag and Food Policy Center who are kind of driving our budgeting considerations for hemp in the upcoming year. Revenue per acre, and this is under a contracted price for CBD percentage in a plant, they've got it at about $2. The spot price has declined significantly on that, and we would expect those contract prices to eventually follow the spot price, but these budgets are assuming about a $2 per percent of CBD in your plant price. That's at 9% CBD with 1,200 pounds of dry matter per acre at about that $2.10 per CBD level. Variable costs significant at that $16,000 an acre range, a net return of $5,800 per acre before fixed costs, so not including our land rent or our land payment or your normal fixed cost you would assume in a production model. If price, yield, or CBD percentage falls by a quarter, so if we drop this down by about 2%, or if our yield drops by about 2% here, so if we lose 300 pounds, or if that price drops, which it's dropped well over 2% at this point, revenue per acre falls to $17,000 per acre, which is just over that $16,000. Net per acre before fixed costs now is $175 an acre, which is more on the magnitude of, we're getting closer to the magnitude of our normal crop production sector. Price has declined by approximately 67% this year, which would lead us to a loss of $9,000 an acre if you were planting hemp under the current market and you were subject to the spot price change, if you considered a 210 per percent CBD changing down to about the dollar that we're seeing now. So there's been a significant decrease in the spot price, well over that 25% threshold that we were testing. So again, here was that maximum price we saw in June into early July. There has been nothing but a decline in price, and this is tracked by a physical exchange out of Colorado called Pan Exchange. And they track the price based on reports around the country. It's important to note, again, these are mostly word-of-mouth reports that they're collecting from around the country from a mixture of both producers and processors, and all with an incentive to report different numbers. But an aggregation of everything they have put together has led to a belief of a decrease in price from above $4 to right around the $1 level. So a significant decrease in price for a percentage of CBD content per pound. Again, if we had seen a 25% decrease in price, we would still expect a positive return. But because of the significant price drop that we've seen, I would project a negative return on CBD production model in the upcoming year. Again, this is just a measure of where prices are right now on that same Pan Exchange. The Colorado price, the Kentucky price, and the Oregon price, we're at a little bit below a dollar on the spot price. Now, if you've contracted with someone who is offering you $2 and you have sat down with your lawyer and they are confident in their contract or the contract you have with the processor, the story is a little different, because if you're hanging on to that $2 price or that $3 price, there might be a difference in the overall outcome for your operation. But if you're subject to the spot price, and eventually that contract rate will be subject to the spot price just because of economic fundamentals, you're going to be looking at a price much closer to this. And that's because production is more than likely outpacing overall demand for CBD products. So again, revenue per acre much lower than the previous projection, leading to a net loss in the CBD model of $4,500 an acre. And this is just the CBD model. I've got some slides on fiber that we can talk about if anyone's interested at the end, but CBD is the one that's driving these massive numbers that are leading to a bunch of hype in the hemp world. So this is the slide I wanted to cover in my short time with you. So what are AFPC estimated costs and returns? Again, we have that grain model and that fiber model. Finally, out here on the end, we have the CBD model. If you are subject to the AFPC estimated costs and returns, which again are subject to a preset contract price, you would expect $5,000 or higher per acre in the CBD production model. A loss in fiber and a slight gain on the normal magnitude per acre of other crops in the grain model, because it is a grain. But this is the picture overall for pricing and net returns per acre if prices are in that $2.10 range. Again, I expect that they will be declining, and I'd be interested if anybody has a contract for something that's greater than $2.10 or greater than the spot price currently. Final thoughts, caution is the most important thing. If you are working with someone who's offering you a price for him, am I out of time? Oh, okay. All right, good. All right, I was going to leave him with this last point. Okay. So if you are discussing hemp production with someone and they are from the state of Texas and they say they're an expert, make sure that you vet them at every step of their production chain. You need to make sure that not only do you talk to them about their credentials, you look up their credentials. If they say they have a production line in place, go visit that production line. Go visit with their workers, see how long they've been working there, how long they've known that person. Be very confident that you know the people that you're getting into business with, because there have been a lot of reports of people who are kind of selling you a snake oil option, and we're not necessarily sure that they have the best intentions in mind for you. They probably have the best intentions in mind for them. So, and that's not even necessarily people with nefarious intentions against you. There are reputable companies out of the state of Kentucky who have processed hemp now for 2 or 3 years, who have sent letters in the fall of 2019 saying, we are going to be unable to give you your check yet because the price has declined so much. So it's the most important thing is to vet every step of your production and sit down with a lawyer who will help you with your contract. Those are the two most important points I would make if you're considering hemp production, and I'd be happy to talk with y'all more afterwards. Got a couple of resources here at amarillo.tamu.edu. Got the Crop Profitability Analyzer, which is an interactive budgeting tool, as well as our High Plains budgets. And February 6th and 7th, we have a marketing workshop where if you're interested in, you know, making your crop mix choice for the upcoming year, you can talk with Dr. Welch, Dr. Robinson, and myself, where we'll help you develop a marketing plan. You can register there at agrilife.register.tamu.edu/grain. We'll talk about marketing, the crop insurance considerations we're expecting for the upcoming year, policy movement in the upcoming year, a bunch of different things. For those of you who attended Master Marketer, it's basically a two-day version of Master Marketer focused on this 1 year and some marketing education. Finally, this is where you can reach me, all my contact information. This is my weekly blog. It's Amarillo Ag Econ at agrilife.org. I put out weekly posts. There have been some on hemp. This last year it was a lot of hemp and a lot of trade because both of those topics were so important on the national stage. But I'll talk about anything that's important to the High Plains of Texas, from livestock to crops, marketing to some economic fundamentals, and occasionally I'll put out a learning post where I talk about just economics and how to educate yourself in economics in general. So if you don't like those, you can definitely skip them. But if anybody has any questions, that's about what I've got for you today. One question. Do what? Hemp? So I've heard hand harvesting as well as some combining, but I've heard it's very tough on your traditional combine blades. But I'm no agronomist. That'd be something more for maybe if Jordan's around and she wanted to, or if Dr. Trossel, if you've talked to Calvin, those would be the people to talk to. Those are just the two options that I've heard. Pretty rough on equipment. Any other questions? All right, good deal. Thank you all.